Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Hello, how are you? Great to see you. Thanks for coming. They're all the things that I said to people as they entered the venue at the weekend in London, in Bush Hall. What a class experience. What a really good time, man. Thanks so much to everybody who came, if you're indeed listening to this. I don't know, you just heard it on Sunday, so why would you go listen to this again? But thanks so much for coming out to everybody who came. And for those of you who missed out, you can come the next time. Chalk it down. I'm going to be doing another show this weekend in Cork in the Kino Theatre as part of the Cork Podcast Festival. And fingers crossed, we're going to have an amazing guest talking about free speech, talking about censorship again, and some new insights from an Irish point of view. So if you want to get tickets for that, there's a link in the description below, or you can hit us up on social media, or if you can't find a link or you're having trouble, DM me. I'll send you over some stuff and you can get hooked up. There's loads of other great podcasts as well going on. So if you're in the area, or if you don't mind a small train journey, my show is going to be in the Kino Theatre on the 12th of October. That's the Saturday. It's going to be on at 6 p.m. So it's a totally reasonable time. Doors at 5:30. Show at 6. We'll be all over by 8. And you can be back on a train or a bus or whatever you need to get out of Dodge. There's loads of stuff in the afternoon as well if you want to come down and make a day of it. But yeah, it's the Cork Podcast Festival. So for this show, this is an interview. It was done live on stage in front of approximately almost 200 people in the Bush Hall Theatre in Shepherd's Bush. And I just want to say thanks to SJM and to Alex and Matt for sorting that out for us, and to Georgie, and to, they're not listening to this, but I just want to say thanks to them, and to Constantine Kissin, who's the comedian guest that you're about to listen to. Constantine is a savage. If you don't know him, he was thrust into the limelight because he refused to bow down to the social justice mob in a college gig for a society. And they gave him a whole list of stuff. You'll hear about it in the interview. But he ended up getting on all these TV shows, and he was explaining his story, and he's a social commentator, and he joins people on their TV shows and talks about this kind of crack, often in opposition of some, social justice warrior or, you know, unreasonable feminist on the other side. He was famously shushed on Good Morning Britain. You can go and check that out. It's probably the first thing that pops up when you type in his name. But yeah, he's a comedian, and he has a show on the 16th of November in the Bill Murray in London. And I'm going to leave a link below for that if you want to go see it. He was doing Orwell That Ends Well, which is his Edinburgh show that went on for the summer. So this is kind of a reprieve. No, a reprise. Reprieve. He was given forgiveness for the Edinburgh show. It's a reprise of his Edinburgh show. And you can also listen to his excellent podcast, Trigonometry, which is now my new favourite podcast. The guests on it are phenomenal. Constantine is on the show, and there's another presenter, and they have guests come on, the experts that deal with all this stuff day to day, the authors, the experts, the main men and women that deal with this kind of stuff. And very, very interesting interviews, very, very interesting guests. So get on that Trigonometry. Trigger like a gun, and nometry. I leave the links for all of that stuff in the thing below. This show in London was class. A great experience. I fucking loved it. I loved the atmosphere. The guest was amazing. The audience were amazing. You guys came with the thunder. For the first half, then I did a sit-down interview with Constantine, and that's going to be put out here to the public. And you can all have a listen to that. And then it's going to be taken back and put in behind a paywall behind Patreon if you want to hear it in the future. And then there's a whole other second half of another 90 minutes where I come out and we get into it with the audience and we start talking about some shit to do with free speech and censorship and all of these different topics. And that's exclusive to Patreon only. If you want to get at that, patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys, or click the link in the description below and you can get at that. That's another hour and a half extra of bants with the crowd and talking about some talking about some stuff, talking about some shit, talking about some other stuff. I don't want to spoil it. But yeah, to get at that, patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys. So like I said, tickets are coming for the show in Cork at the Kino Theatre. Get on it if you want to come and have it out. The Cork Podcast Festival has loads of great shows, and if you want to bounce in there and have a look. But for now, I'll lead you straight in to the live show from Bush Hall.
There's lights and everything. Hello. Hello, London. What's going on? So many beautiful faces. I saw you're all in a queue outside. I was like, oh, there's a line. I'm so happy. So I'm Gordo. I just want to check before we start. Who here has heard the podcast before? I didn't say put up hands, but hands is good. Okay, so without wanting to pick on anybody, I'm not going to pick. Hands up who haven't heard the podcast. Okay, you, sir. The lads, you, sir. Is this in some kind of a pact for oral sex or whatever when you get home? Or it's like, please bring me and you get whatever you want. Free tickets. So I'm just going to take a few minutes, introduce the show, tell you what's going to happen. We have a great guest. He's backstage now, pacing up and down. And he's going to come up. We're going to have a chat about censorship, about free speech, about the Jews, all that stuff. And run away. And yeah. So so it's going to be about an hour for the first bit, and then you can go and do a wee wee, or if you're brave, a poo poo, and just a hover and have a drink. Now, I'm not precious, so if anybody wants to like get up and go get a drink, if you ran out of drink, you can go and do it. If you need to go to the toilet, you don't have to wait till the break. It's not, you know. And if a fire happens, just get the fuck out of here. Just go. Double doors. So we've got some people. I said hello to some people at the door, and I heard a few accents come down from north on train. So I don't mean to be like doing school teacher shit, but who's from London? So nearly everyone is from London, pretty much. Okay, who's the furthest away person? Who would deign to claim geographically the furthest away person to come? Yorkshire, all right. Where? Fuck off. Offaly. Do you know that I I'm from Ireland, right? All right. Yeah. What? You're Offaly, and you came over here for this? All right. Cool. Shit. I thought he was like, fucking came over here for this, and he's after announcing the gig in Dublin in November. Raging. So Offaly is winning so far, which is the first time for that for Offaly. No, Los Angeles! Who said that? Who? Oh, good man yourself. Los Angeles. And he came over specially for this. Fair play to you, boss. Jesus. Appreciate that. What are you doing here from Los Angeles? Just having a holiday, and you managed to find your way to get the fuck in here. Okay. And you were like, I'm going to quite, like, traditionally California is quite liberal, so I guess are you going to be doing loads of heckling and talking about people's rights and shit? All right, cool. Okay. Is it true that the streets of San Francisco are lined with human shit?
Yes.
There we go. Debate over. So thanks you guys for coming. This is bizarre for me, because usually I'm in me jocks in a room on my own. It's quite uncomfortable for the guests on the podcast. But my house, my rules. It's like a nut fog just generally around the table. I've been a little bit lax of late putting out shows. I apologize to anybody who's been waiting around for shows, but also, you know, turn to your family and loved ones for conversation instead, maybe. We there was plans to go to America, and they're still there, don't worry. So we're going to do a Q&A later on, and people are asking like, what about America? I'm going to be like, yeah, it's still there, don't worry, like, for now. So we're going to go. Claire and I, Claire is here, by the way, somewhere. I don't know where she, woo! Somebody did a woo. I don't think that was Claire, though. we went to Europe, and there's loads of videos for the GoFundMe and Patreon folks. Hands up anyone who's a Patreon here. Okay, cool. Personal hugs and stuff for you guys later on. Nothing else, though. Hashtag me too. There will be witnesses. We're going to talk for about an hour with Constantine. We're going to have a little break. And then we're all going to talk more about the stuff that we talked about with him. But you're going to get a chance to have the bands, and I can see you. Fucking hell, what was that? Oh. I was like, this is it, the sniper's light, we're done, it's over. Some of the lads outside were like, I heard what you were saying when you walk up and down the street outside, making fun of how many kebab shops we have on the streets. I heard you, joking. I was joking, so many kebab shops, it's the fucking whole, the road is halal, it's bananas. It is bananas. So we're going to talk about all of that kind of stuff. And then at the end, you're going to get a Q&A to ask whatever you feel like, whatever you want. Oh, on the front row, wearing a t-shirt, represent. Fair play to you. Good man. Merch. He'll be at the back selling. That's up later. It's like, get this. Yeah, €14. You can have it. So yeah, it's all fun, man. It's all we're not out to annoy anybody or make anyone feel left out or excluded. If you have a problem, what you need to do, there will be pens and paper down the back, and you just write on a little piece of paper, and then roll it into a tight roll, and then just poke it up your arsehole. Because that's not what this is about. We're all here for the crack, and I guess we started the podcast years ago, and I never saw it coming this far. In reality, but in my imagination, I was like, I can do the O2. If Jack Whitehall can do it, I can fucking do it. You know? And then I said, Daddy! I was like, sure, fucking do that shit. So it's really nice. Like, it swells my heart. It might be the cholesterol, but it swells my heart to see that you all came out of your head. You could have sat at home on your arses, you know, but you came out. So I really appreciate that. You can give us a round of applause, I guess, if you like. You for each other, not for yourself. Thanks, you all, for coming in. If you want to take pictures. I'm filming stuff, and we're going to put this out as a podcast. And if you're asking questions, I guess you should be aware, GDPR, should be aware that question might get listened to by a couple of 100,000 people. So don't fuck it up. Pressure. So it's really good to be here in London. We had to organize this gig this October, because afterwards, visa issues and stuff for me coming over, it's going to be really, really annoying. Strip search, body cavity, all that stuff, you know. We're not going to talk about Brexit tonight. Hey! Are you all fucking sick of this shit, are you? Like, don't even mention it, please. It's like, not even, we won't even... No? Okay, good, yeah. Just to close it. Yeah, so we just talk about censorship and black lads and all this kind of stuff, and not being able to say the words to people. Welcome for thanks so much. It's really happy. I'm going to introduce your guest for this first part, and we have a small video that's going to show kind of what he's all about. And Ian might help us out with that, please. So watch this.
Here's the form that you were asked to. It said, by signing this contract, this is the UNICEF on campus at SOAS, right?
He was asked to sign an agreement that his routine would not contain racism, sexism, classism, ageism, ableism, homophobia, biphobia, transphobia, xenophobia, Islamophobia, anti-religion, anti-atheism.
I think you're doing some quite complicated mental arithmetic to offset the fact that people didn't think you were funny. I think the reality
saw me performing a top secret comedy club.
You have absolutely no sense of humor, do you?
First,
Is that real? Did you make up that list? Is this a comedy bit?
No, it's not. It's been very good for my comedy. But actually, if you go further into the contract, they also demanded that all jokes must be respectful and kind.
And I feel like you're just, I mean, you're just sort of being a bit of an alt-right, you know.
Oh, alt-right. That, we got there in the end. You did.
The good thing about being called a Nazi comedian, right, is I now have got a niche. Problem is, I haven't got any racist, sexist, homophobic jokes. I'm actually quite a progressive guy. Like, some of my best friends are gender-fluid lesbians of colour.
The idea of being a student at a university where you can't make any joke about anything, here's these poor little woke students get upset or triggered. Get over yourselves!
It's not about comedy, it's about ordinary people up and down the country and here in Britain, yes, and in America feeling like they can't say what they think.
I really don't. Like, I get it, especially the women who want to become men. I get it. Do you remember when Gareth Bale, right, went from Tottenham to Real Madrid? The guy left a perfectly good club for more money.
Everybody feels like we're all kind of under arrest. We're all everything we say can and will be used against us in the court of public opinion. And they're coming for the comedians first because we're the ones that, as you say, are allowed to transgress. But everybody else feels it, and that's why the story's got the resonance that it has.
Welcome to the stage, Constantine Kissin.
Hello.
The guy off the video.
Thanks for coming, man.
Yeah, these chairs, man. Opulent up as fuck. Oh,
you've got a little spy camera on me already.
Yeah, man. You're Russian. We gotta fucking keep an eye on you.
I'm used to it. Yeah.
No, look at, he's a celebrity, everybody. It's great to have you, man. Thanks a million.
Thanks for having me.
So I was put onto you by a good friend of mine, Chris Kent. We're so far away. Shit, it's so impersonal. I was put onto you by a friend of mine, Chris Kent, who's a great comedian.
Great comedian.
And he said, I asked Chris, do you know anybody that's like mad about the LPC? And he's like, oh yeah, I know one lad, all right. And it seems to be you're the guy of the moment right now. Tell us a little bit about what happened for the people that don't know yet or know what. I feel I'm like the Fonz or something like this. I'm like, or fucking Godfather's like, Constantine. Tell me about what happened to you.
Yeah.
For those that don't know, you were you were asked to go do a gig for the SOAS.
Yeah, so I perform in a comedy club here in London, Top Secret, some of you may know. There were some students in, they saw me, they liked my set, which is kind of the irony of it. They liked what I was doing. And when they invited me, they sent me this contract, right? Which I think the list was on there, racism, sexism, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And when I turned it down, I tweeted about it to like my 3 followers at the time, and I went to bed, right? And just to put it in context, at this point, I'm a no-name comedian. No one's ever heard of me.
Right? How long ago was this now?
This was half a year ago.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. So no one's heard of me.
Controversial fame is fickle mistress.
To contextualize it, like at this point, like when I called up my agent to tell what was happening, she couldn't believe it because she'd forgotten she represented me.
Yeah.
So I turn it down, and then it becomes this huge story to TV, radio, everywhere. As you can see, Kate Smurthwaite, who's this mental, radical feminist comedian, she called me a Nazi, which, as I say, was great for me because I've now got a niche. I'm the only Jewish Nazi comedian in the world, crushing that skinhead synagogue circuit. Absolutely brilliant. And it just became this massive story literally overnight.
Do you think there was a vacuum of dissent for this PC culture that most people, I don't want to say, you know, these trigger terms like the silent majority of white people, but like the silent majority that seem to rail against these situations that happen, the heads raised above the parapet of SJW policing, that you were like, oh my God, this guy stood up to some shit. Give him all the kudos. Do you think that it was because of that or because people are just fed up of people trying to police their thoughts and their mind and their jokes?
Yes.
To all of them?
Yes.
All right. Both of them.
Well, I think they're both actually the same point, which is that the vast majority, I think the studies show this, about 75% of people in Britain think the political correctness has gone too far.
Yeah.
So there is a silent majority, and they're increasingly not very silent. People are fed up of it. And I think when people stand up to it, that's when people project all their own concerns onto that person, and they go, oh, finally someone is talking about this. So when I turned down the contract, I got literally thousands of messages from people all over the world saying, thank you for doing this. You know, this is how I feel. And of course, the thing with us is we are relatively free to say what we think.
Yeah.
But if you've got a job, or if you...
Well, they'll hold it over you, yeah.
And then you...
I'm going to get you fired.
Yeah.
It's like, I just skipped you in the... Like, you were fucking on your phone, and I just ordered in front of you in the coffee shop. I don't care. You are cancelled.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
And the thing is, the people who do that, they do actually have power. I mean, there was a guy who was fired from his job in Asda because he shared a Billy Connolly routine about religion on his Facebook, right? He was fired.
But who's at fault there? Is that like the people in Asda and HR are going, we cannot weather the storm of one of our shelf packers sharing a Billy Connolly video. This could be the end of us.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know? They're all walking around like nervously patting their arses. Is that them capitulating to the mob by going like, let's just squash everything, like self-censorship? Or do they actually agree and go like, yeah, he shouldn't have shared that. We're looking to fire that cunt.
I think it's more the first point, which is that they're concerned about the repercussions because they've all become convinced that what they see on Twitter is reality.
That's a huge thing.
Which it absolutely isn't. Mm. There's like 12% of people in the world, or even in Britain, I think, are on Twitter. So there is this mob of a minority that they perceive as having power over them.
And it feels real.
Yeah, it feels... Well, if it's your world, if you are on Twitter, if your work, if your job is publicity, managing publicity, then you perceive what happens on Twitter as the real thing. And you know, there's a lot of interaction between the social media and the media. So most journalists get their stories now from social media.
Yeah.
Right? So if something happens in social media, that will affect your company, or at least you'll perceive that it does.
But it's 30 shares. That's 30 motherfuckers, like, looking at it.
Yeah.
That's not going to break the bank for Asda. It's like 30 thumbs down. Like, I don't see... it's the Streisand effect. So by them trying to silence that thing, they're actually amplifying the problem.
And they're highlighting the ridiculousness of the place that we're in. Yeah,
I didn't want to say, but, I mean, you're allowed to say it, I guess. John Cleese weighed in.
Yeah.
Behind you. To be
very helpful. When I got called a Nazi, he came out and said that he saluted me. Thanks, John.
You get a
got worse from there, actually, because Katie Hopkins was watching as well, and she commented as well.
I found out the other day that Katie Hopkins is only 2 years older than me. I was like, shit. She is wore out.
Yeah.
Wore out like an old coat.
Yeah, she is. She came out on Twitter and called me a soy boy.
Right.
Do we know what a soy boy is? The official definition of a soy boy is a man who's physically weak, has never been in a fight, and will probably marry the first girl that has sex with him. Yeah, painful. Having to admit Katie Hopkins isn't always wrong.
A stop clock is right twice a day.
Yeah.
And her face looks like a stop clock.
Yeah. So, yeah, John Cleese was... A lot of people, to be fair. What I found was a lot of people at the very top of the comedy world and more broadly were very happy to comment on it positively in terms of what I did.
There's a certain element of untouchableness, though, to those dudes.
But that's the point.
Do you know? That no one can take their dinner away.
That's my point. Yeah. Is the only people who are prepared to speak their mind anymore are people who can't lose what they have, or have enough that they have fuck you money, right?
Yeah, like medium level Irish podcasts. It's like, I've enough to pay the rent.
I've seen your Patreon numbers. You're doing pretty well.
Yeah,
mate.
I mean, it's not like, you know what I'm saying? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, look at these chairs, son. It's fucking opulent. Look at this one. Yeah. Chandeliers and shit.
Yeah. No, but seriously, most of the
people... I don't own this stuff, by the way. So, no. This is rental.
The thing for you, right, is if you were to get cancelled, it would probably be a good thing.
And it'd only boost my numbers.
It'd only boost your profile. But for people who are in the mainstream...
I'll be dropping N-words at certain intervals throughout the show, everybody. Woo! I won't.
But for people who are in the mainstream, who are on TV, who are on radio, whose livelihood depends on being part of a system, for them, they have to be at a point of safety before they feel comfortable commenting.
But they also have the antithesis that, like, lads like Peter Lloyd and stuff, who make their career of news... appointments and news, like being invited on these different talk shows, and like yourself, to be that other voice. And then you have the Kate Smurthwaite. Is that who you say her name?
Yeah.
Like, she looks like
you shouldn't say her name, but
she,
you shouldn't say her name at all.
If you say it three times, she shows up.
Yeah, exactly.
She looks like she needs a sun holiday, really. Like, that's just a bit of happiness.
Yeah.
It's not, it's so sour. But John Cleese is one of these guys that's like classic, untouchable. Super high level comedy that up until recently was untouchable. Like, he had this air of comedy royalty. He started an awful lot of people. He was an inspiration for an awful lot of people. And I watched the clips of you talking about his support for you online, and people are readily willing to just shit all over him now because he said a thing. What's that? Oh yeah, what's the what are the commercials for? Banks and stuff like that. Yeah.
He sold out despite his millions. Well, actually, what happened was it wasn't quite him supporting me. It was what happened was he said that London is not really an English city anymore. Right.
What do people think about that? Murmur if you don't agree.
Murmur, someone murmur, said murmur. True over there.
London is. What's that? Sadiq Khan agrees. Yeah, I mean, like, for a certain demographic of people, John Cleese, a white man who's living in the Caribbean with people of colour, saying that London is not an English city anymore.
Well, yeah, he hates black people so much he moved to their country.
Yeah, yeah. That's what we all. That's, you know, that's why Hitler went to South America.
Yeah,
that's, they will never suspect. No, seriously, like he's living there. He's commenting on a point of culture rather than a point of race.
Yeah, but everybody made it about race, so it was immediately assumed that he was racist. And so, Good Morning Britain, whenever they need someone to defend someone who's made these comments, they call me. So I went basically on the program to defend him, and I tried to explain to people that if you have a city like London where 43% now of the people who live here are like me, born abroad, that will make it less English. And they
but then what is English? That's the thing. Is it like the national...
They tried to convince me that I'm English while I was on the show.
I saw that.
Yeah,
you're
saw
like,
that.
I'm actually Russian. Yeah, whatever, English. It's very weird.
Yeah. And they couldn't get it through the head, which made for a great clickbait video. I tried to say what I think is an obvious truth. And what happens every time I go on Good Morning Britain is they suspend all the comments on the YouTube videos. Because the public agree with what I'm saying.
And they can't
But they don't want that to be the thing. So whenever they have a debate between... They always bring in some crazy person and me. Yeah. They bring on two crazy people. I'm one of them. You can always see on Twitter afterwards, like, who won or whatever. You know what I mean? And it's always the case that the vast majority of the people in the country don't agree with this radical mental ideology. But if you're a TV channel...
The cohort that do agree are much louder, though, I think.
Yeah. But my point is they're managing even that. So they're trying to create a way of not showing the fact that most people don't agree with it. You know, they hide the comments, they stop people from commenting completely.
But it's even been put into, like, people are afraid to talk about this stuff because there's now legal ramifications. Like, I don't know how... I think it was you that was saying on that John Cleese episode, or that John Cleese clip, that there was 8,000 arrests in England in 2018 for people putting out, like, tweets and social media posts. 8,000, is that right?
3,300.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Show me.
But that's still quite a lot.
Yeah.
I usually ask people, like, when I did the whole run in Edinburgh talking about this whole thing. And that's one of the things I would always ask every single night. I would ask people, how many people do you think have been arrested in this country for things they said on social media? And almost inevitably, the people who did not know the answer, it was like one to 100.
Or people like me who would grossly overestimate.
Yes.
And make the 3,300 seem trivial in retrospect.
Exactly. There's always one idiot. Yeah. So, yeah.
That was really well set up. We totally did that. That was a bit totally planned.
So 3,300 people is a lot of people.
That's a stupid amount of people.
Yeah. And again, in my show, I talk about some of the examples of some of the stuff that has happened. Yeah. You know, there was a girl in Liverpool who, her friend was killed in a car crash, and she posted the lyrics of his favorite song on her Instagram. And the lyrics contained the N-word, because it was a rap song, right? And because she was white, this was deemed as a hate crime. She was arrested, prosecuted, convicted of a hate crime. She was tagged, given 500 hours of community service, and she was a hate criminal for a year. Right.
Shit.
Yeah. And
I'm really regretting promising all those N-bombs. So you're not in Dublin anymore, lads.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are examples of people, and her appeal, she appealed and eventually was overturned.
Yeah, but like...
But look, the fact that the state is arresting people for something like that, you can be pretty comfortable that that is going to have an effect on people's willingness to say that what they think, and because they know, well, I might be arrested, I might be a hate criminal for a year. What if my appeal doesn't get overturned? Who wants to be involved in that? Tell them all about it, those
conspiracy guys. Like Count Dankula is probably one of the more famous ones, where he taught his pug dog, who his girlfriend thought was very cute, he's like, I'm going to show her. The dog is evil. And he made the dog do a Nazi salute, and he was like saying, gas the Jews, and the dog was like, boop.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you want to do? You want to gas the Jews? Boop. Like, and they arrested him, prosecuted him. They fined him £800, and like people like Lauren Southern and Paul Joseph Watson all came to his aid to kind of publicise the case. Otherwise, that just would have went under the radar. He got a huge YouTube following, and he's appealing the fine and the stamp of hate criminal.
Well, like, the appeal obviously was denied, it was a joke, wasn't it? Huh? It was denied, I think.
Yeah, it's going through. There's another set now again.
Well, I talked to him last time. I think he was like done.
He's finished with
it. I think so. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that, but I could be wrong. Yeah. So he's a hate criminal for life. He can't find a job. He's a Nazi. Officially. When the papers write about him, they say Nazi hate criminal.
Yeah.
They are legally allowed to call him a Nazi.
For a joke.
Because he did a fucking joke on YouTube.
Yeah.
Right. That's where we are.
Yeah, it seems bizarre that that can be allowed to happen, and yet what it's doing is forcing people into not having conversations or not talking, to get off social media, to abandon stuff like Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, when all that is doing is removing the voice of dissent. You're removing the argument.
Well, it's funny you mention that.
Leaving all those people to just fucking squeeze their nips and agree with each other on Twitter and just be like, aren't we all great? Yeah. And
it's funny you should mention the eradication of the centre and the reasonable opinion, because the BBC contacted me after the contract thing because they were doing a documentary about Dankula.
Right.
And they said, would you be interested in talking to him on camera to see, you know, how you guys get on, stack up, whatever, because you believe in free speech, right? But you're Jewish, you know, the whole thing.
Classic comedy Jew, like two Ronnies.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And so they got me.
One's a Nazi, the other's a Russian Jew. Like, it writes itself.
Well, we're both Nazis in this world, aren't we? So they got us together. We had about an hour and a half on camera chatting about different things. It was a good conversation. I don't agree with him on everything. He doesn't agree with me on everything, like any other two human beings.
Sure.
But we had a good conversation. And then the BBC were like, that was really great. You know what we loved? We loved the nuance of it. We loved the balance of it. That was absolutely brilliant. By the way, do you know anyone who might have a more extreme anti-free speech view on this? I was like, yeah, I know loads of comedians who are against free speech, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So I recommended them a guy who I knew would be absolutely crazy.
Should we name names? Are we dropping names?
Well, you can watch the documentary. It's Nazi Pug something on the BBC. They got him, and they got a guy who runs a comedy night in London, which is basically run according to the rules of the contract that I turned down. Like, so they give out stickers to people who want to be talked to. So if you don't have a sticker...
That's ridiculous.
Then I can't talk to you.
But... So So they're in the audience, and if they don't have a sticker, you can't like look at them, or what is it?
Yeah, yeah, there are some stickers for not being looked at as well. It's like the whole thing.
They used to do that like in nightclubs in Ireland, and if you want to like kiss somebody or if you want to get fingered, there's like different stickers. You're like, drop the hand, son, green lights. You know, hashtag yeah. Me Too generation kind of ruined that. Yeah. But like those traffic light nights, you were just like. Just like you were putting, like working in a factory, putting fillings in donuts, you were like, like all night. Like, now you have it for jokes. Like, you can't tell if you have a taint. That's like what the Nazis would do to gay lads and Jews. It's like you have your own special pink one, like a pink triangle if you're gay, and you're all like, don't touch that one. Like, that's bizarre.
So they got him and this other crazy comedian guy to basically have a shouting match with Dankula on camera.
Right. And manufactured outrage.
Yeah, and then when I watched the final program, it was actually me and another Jewish comedian, Joe Jacobs, who had a reasonable conversation with Dankula. When the final video came out, we weren't in it. At all.
And now are you suing for discrimination because you're Jewish? Turn the tables.
Yeah. So it was only the people who had the craziest opposition to what Dankula did that made it into the video, because that's how the mainstream media works. They create this false narrative that the extreme on one side and the extreme on the other side are the people who are disagreeing. They cut out everybody in the middle, and then they go, "Ooh, look at our country, so divided." Well, you're the ones that are doing it.
Yeah, they're manufacturing it,
Yeah, they're manufacturing that completely. And they're cutting out any sane voices from the middle because it doesn't sell. The thing with the mainstream media is their numbers are dropping so rapidly because of what we do.
Yeah.
That they are the clickbait medium now, in a way that the internet isn't. Like, long-form discussion podcasts are now overtaking mainstream media. I mean, Joe Rogan, Dave Rubin, they have a bigger audience.
Yeah, yeah, sure, all of them. All the best ones.
Than you or me or the mainstream media. Yeah. And that's why they're succeeding, because they're a balanced, reasonable conversation that people don't get on TV. You just don't get it.
I think there's also like a digital disruption now with the fact that like people are on Netflix, they're on Amazon Prime, they're on Hulu and Now TV and all these kind of things. So you don't see the ads. You're not influenced by that kind of stuff. You're choosing your own programs. And people like Dave Chappelle, who put out Sticks and Stones, I don't know if anybody here has watched it. It's probably one of the most popular Netflix releases of all time, according to the stats. That he comes out in that and he says some shit that's like wild, especially in the time now. And it got such a positive reception by the people that watched it, the general like public. And the critics on Rotten Tomatoes gave it like 1%, and then the people's review is like 99%. And that kind of shows where the establishment media stand on topics like that. People are choosing their own destiny when it comes to the media they consume. So like, what's the future for news? What's the future for these talk shows? Like, they're kind of fucked a little bit.
Yeah.
So they're allowing people to use the tools of censorship, like cancel culture, coming out saying, like with Kevin Hart, for example, he's one of the most popular and largest selling comedians of all time ever. And they managed to fuck with him somehow. Do you know? Like, self-censorship is a real... it's a real like sticking point for someone that has an opinion. Like, would you be afraid to put something online now that you're in the position that you're in, the fame that you have for being a bold boy? Like, would you be putting out shit like that's like court and controversy, or are you just answering the stream that comes in?
I think that is actually a pitfall for a lot of people, where you go, "Ooh, if I tweet this really edgy thing, suddenly I'm going to get loads of followers." I think I probably went through a bit of that initially. Because I was like, "Ooh, I've got an audience now. I can play with it." But I think what I do that's controversial, I just say what I think.
Yeah.
And that is enough nowadays to get you in trouble. But as we say, if you're not dependent on a hierarchy, if you're not working for someone else, that is a freedom that you have. And I actually think increasingly a responsibility that you have to say what you think, because a lot of people can't.
A lot of people say that to me, man. Like, when I say some stuff on the show, they're like, "How dare you say that? You've a responsibility to maintain the status quo because you have such a big audience." First of all, I don't have such a big audience. It's big, but it's not like, you know, it's more wit. Like, the point is, like, they're telling me that, like, because my audience is bigger, I shouldn't say some stuff. So it's like, so it's totally okay if you have like 5,000 followers to say some fucking wild racist shit. Mm. Like, the logic of it doesn't match up, you know. So with stuff like Dave Chappelle, he came out and said all that, and people have kind of started to wake up. That was a real injection of, I don't like to say wokeness anymore because it's taken on a new meaning, but it was an injection of cop on that was really needed. Yeah. For people. And it was mainstream. It was Dave Chappelle. People weren't expecting that. They were expecting, like, I'm Rick James, bitch! Like, mm. And they ended up getting fucking schooled on LGBs and Ts.
He's allowed to do it.
Huh?
He's allowed to do it.
But that's the thing. Why is he allowed to do it? Like, there's a whole load of stuff stacking up against him in his cultural capital. Like, he's grandfathered into this system of no... Like, his TV show was, like, the most extreme, like, racist stuff, like, sexist stuff... That would now absolutely not fly. Mm. But he's allowed to say it because he's Dave Chappelle. I don't... Do you know what I mean? Like, not that he shouldn't say it. What I'm saying is he got to inject that into a lot of people that would never have looked it up on YouTube or looked up any stuff from you or from people in your cohort, like people who are fighting against this stuff. I think it woke a lot of people up. People are starting to go, like, what's going on out there? You talked to Sargon of Akkad, who's doing that for a really long time. So, yeah. Cara Benjamin. He's kind of like... he's like a bad guy, I guess, online. He's like a bold boy who's saying stuff that people don't like. Like, what was your interaction with him like?
Good, I know Carl pretty well. I don't agree with him on a lot of politics stuff, but I'm one of those people that I just think I can be friends and know people who have different opinions.
Yeah.
And it doesn't... I don't think that... Like, a lot of people... I'm somewhere bang in the center politically, right? Yeah. A lot of people who are left of me are like, why are you talking to this person? And I'm like, well, why wouldn't I be talking to people that I don't agree with?
There's divisions of rank, or there's divisions of, like, tribe based on thought. So, like, you hanging out with Cara Benjamin, for most people outside, thinks that, like, that's fucking... Why would he talk to him?
Yeah.
But, like, what were you talking about? Like, what was the common ground?
Well, we were talking about the culture wars, the stuff that we're talking about here. And I think on a lot of that stuff, he's absolutely right. But would I join UKIP? No. He did.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I said it to his face, his campaign was fucking terrible. And he got himself into a lot of trouble because he assumed that... Because Carl is an online creature, he thinks that... the real world works the same way, and it doesn't. People will... this is why I have another friend who's a comedian who was thinking of running for office, and I said, don't do it, because everything you've ever said ironically will be used against you as if you meant it seriously.
Yeah.
And
that's why I'll never do it, because there's about 600 hours of bullshit out there.
Yeah.
You could clip out 60 seconds, close your eyes and pick something, and I'm fucked. Yeah. Like, stuff out of context. Like, he was shoulder to shoulder... With Dankula, like, at these UKIP meetings, he was going... it felt to me like he was just trolling because he could.
Yeah.
It was just, he was being a provocateur.
Mm.
When he came out from his YouTube persona, I feel it kind of fell apart a little bit for him. Mm. He wasn't able for the criticism that people were giving, and there was so much layered at him. And now a load of his stuff, like, he had to start up the Tinkery, and he has a couple of different YouTube channels. So YouTube has started to really crack down on a lot of this stuff. Like, only a month ago they've switched off 180,000 channels. They've unverified another 100,000. They've taken loads of videos down, and it's all in the guise of copyright infringement, or you said such and such a thing, or just like little bullshit community guidelines. You get 3 strikes and you're out.
Yeah.
So there's a huge self-censorship atmosphere now on YouTube where you can't say anything because you're afraid you're going to lose your YouTube channel, and therefore you're...
It depends where you are. Like, my show, Trigonometry, we almost all of our videos get demonetized before they're released. So we upload them and they get demonetized before we've actually published them.
Just from the keywords in the description?
Yeah.
Or?
So it's all algorithm-based. So anything to do with any of these controversial race, feminism, men, women, you know, whatever, it's all automatically demonetized. And it doesn't really matter what you're saying. Like, we had a comedian on the show who was saying that there is no problem with free speech, censorship doesn't exist, blah, 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 blah. That video got demonetized.
I mean... there's a guy called, I'm trying to think of his name now, Nerdwire, I think it was. He did a test about 10 days ago. Mm. And they put up like little 10-second videos and they had all the different terms. So now you can't get videos that have like gay, homosexual, black, African-American. You can't get like trans, like any of these. And they tested like 10,000 terms. And all of them, like you say, get demonetized before they're uploaded.
Yeah.
So why are they... It seems like, why are they... This? It seemed to be like that they were stopping the right-wing conversation, but now it's like any kind of controversial term is being demonetized because they don't want to shit the bed for their advertisers. So more and more, it seems to be about money and their income.
Yeah, but that's a bunch of bullshit, because if you watch YouTube and you go and watch a rap song, which is all about murder, sex, all these subjects, they're monetized.
Yeah.
Right? So I think it's more to do with the fact that the people who live and work in Silicon Valley, they are predominantly lefty liberals who've become convinced that YouTube is a breeding ground for white nationalism, and therefore anyone who's discussing anything to do with any of these issues is getting brainwashed into becoming the next mass shooter or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're trying to stop that. I think that's what's happening.
There's a big LGBT cohort who have been complaining about YouTube because they're putting up like LGBT positive videos that are getting demonetized.
Yeah.
And they're going like, YouTube, are you discriminating against us? And it seems to be YouTuber like going, no, we're not discriminating against you, but we have to cancel all of those words because people want to call you faggots and stuff like that. So we just have to stop it. And you're like, so you're taking away the livelihood of LGBT people for fear that they won't be able to handle people calling them faggots. Like that is... That's such a like a baby mentality where you're like, yeah, listen, you're too gay to take care of yourself, so we're just going to shield you. And likewise, they do it for all the people of color. They're all like, yeah, but listen, like there's black people wearing MAGA hats, and they're all like, yeah, but you don't really know what that means, though, do you?
Yeah.
Like, of course they do, but it just seems like there's a babysitting mentality as well as like.
Well, it's a racist ideology. It's
an
ideology that says that because you are a certain color, you're supposed to have certain opinions.
Yeah.
And that's racist. That is the definition of racism.
I see people like Candace Owens like railing against that stuff.
Yeah.
And she does these college talks and she gets like really erudite, intelligent students coming against her going like, and this and that and my grandfather and plantations and this and that. And she's like, you have a slave mentality. And it's so controversial in that community where people go like, If you're a person of color, you shouldn't be banging on about reparations and banging on about slavery, because that's being in the mind of someone who's still hurt by that thing that never happened to you. Mm. So it's a really weird like thought experiment that would take probably longer than we have now to talk about. But like those structures of conversation are being policed by YouTube, by Twitter, by Facebook, because they don't trust us to be able to have the conversations ourselves and meter our responses.
Well, I have a friend who's a rapper, and a guy called Zuby. I don't know if you... No, nobody knows. All right, I'll tell him.
He's actually doing a set after the show. Ladies and gentlemen, no.
He's the kind of British Candace Owens, I suppose.
Right.
He gets called a Nazi all the time. He's a black Nazi.
The rarest kind.
Yeah, the well, I suppose the correct term would be Nazi of color, really. Yeah. I've been calling this out for a while now. I was on BBC Radio talking about this. It's a racist ideology.
Yeah.
It's a racist, and we need to call it what it is.
It's based within race, like it's based within racism, or what the definition, the old definition of what racism was.
Yeah.
Because now
judging people on the color of their skin.
Yeah.
That's racist.
But the term racism has now changed in the past, I guess, 4 years in the mainstream, and if anyone listened to the cultural Marxism argument, sorry, the cultural Marxism episode, it was...
Prejudice maybe, plus power.
Yeah, it was invented in the 60s and brought through to the 70s. It was kind of raised its head in the 90s, but now it's really in there. Like, it doesn't matter the color of your skin, you can be... Black people are not allowed to be racist. Asian people are not allowed to be racist. You can't
not
say,
able to be racist.
Yeah, yeah. You're not allowed to call them racist, is what I'm saying.
Right.
Because they're coming from a place of less power than a white person.
Mm.
And within that argument, you're like, that's a bit racist.
Yeah.
So you can't be racist because you're black, so you're lower than a white person. That does sound racist.
They call it the bigotry of low expectations, the idea that people from minority groups need to be protected because they are weaker or less powerful or whatever. And of course, there is some truth to the fact that on average, certain groups have been oppressed more than others in history. It doesn't mean that an individual person is more oppressed than you are just because they're black. That's the racist part of it, judging people not as individuals but as members of a group when you don't know anything about them. That's what's racist.
When you were going to talk to those, that SAOS, what were the letter sound? It was like the S, A, the A in it was for African and the O was for Oriental.
Oriental, yeah.
Which, I mean, like that, they were wanting you to protect their sensibilities by not making any jokes outside of your remit of responsibility. So if you made any jokes about their race, they'd get offended.
I don't know. But it's interesting what you were saying about keywords on YouTube. I think, in a way, that is how human beings are becoming in real life as well. So in a comedy club, I'm a comedian, I perform regularly. People don't listen to what you're saying anymore. They react to trigger words.
Right.
So I have a routine about why we need the Special Olympics for white people.
Okay.
Do you hear that?
Yeah.
Right. Now, I'm making fun of white people for being shit at sport, but people tense up anyway. Why? Because the word race is in there, right? Or the concept of race is in there. This is the kind of place we're at now, where whatever it is that you're talking about doesn't really get a hearing if it's got certain words in it. Just like YouTube.
Yeah.
It's the same. And I think that's the direction that we've headed to, is like just shrink everything down, not to the meaning of what you're saying, but just to a word.
And then the meaning of that term or word, like racism, can then be manipulated and changed to benefit
whoever has cultural power.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not really about race. It's not really about equality. It's just about control and power.
I think for some people, it certainly is about equality, but some people have taken that and run with it, and that's always the way with any industry, if you might call it that. Yeah. Like it's racism has become an industry, feminism has become an industry. That's not to say that women haven't been oppressed in some ways and that didn't need to be addressed. Of course it did, right? But Kate Smurthwaite is never going to give up being a feminist. Even if women were superior to men in every way and got paid more, and if you've completely flipped everything, the feminists like her who are radical would never give up because their whole life is invested in it. Yeah. It's a career. They're career feminists.
Like a soldier with no war to fight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They call it the St. Georgian retirement syndrome, where like the big dragons are dead, so he goes around kicking lizards, you know.
There's a weird law that they have now. It's like the panel show rule that they brought in the UK. Is this a real thing where they have to have 50-50 representation for male comics and female comics if they're on TV?
They're working
panel
on
shows.
It. Yeah, I think so.
Like that obviously like would address a certain problem cosmetically, but then it raises other problems in the background because like I don't know the stats on how many female comedians are
18%.
Working. 18%. This man. 18% is that
18% of working comedians are female.
Okay.
And if you go further down to like an open mic gig where anyone can turn up and do a spot, they don't need to say what their gender is. They just turn up and they get on the show.
Yeah.
90% of the people who turn up to do comedy are men, right? And there are biological and evolutionary reasons for that. Right, men evolved to take
microphones
risks.
Are like dicks.
Yeah. Well, that would work against the theory, wouldn't it?
Depends on if you like dicks or not.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good night.
So about 90% are men. And that's because men evolved to take risks. For men, from an evolutionary standpoint, being funny was more important than it was for women. Right.
Especially if you're fat. I mean...
Stop fat shaming yourself. That's my job. No, but seriously. So... men, just empirically speaking, men seem to be more attracted to doing comedy, right? For whatever reasons. And you can go as far deep down into that as you want. So you can have 50-50 women. At the moment, they're working on it, and what's happening is the best people aren't necessarily getting through.
That's what I mean. You're filling a quota based on some arbitrary number.
And then a lot of people go, oh, wait, women aren't funny, which is bullshit. Female comedians are brilliant. There are some brilliant female comedians. But if you put people in a position for which they're not yet ready, too early, then that sabotages the whole thing for everybody.
Or for the wrong reasons. Like if they're smoking poles back in the green room just to get a spot, like, I mean, you get your...
No comment.
That's why I had to fail at the start for 10 minutes. He's like... Yeah. No, like, there's other ways that people can succeed, and I think there's an element of meritocracy in everything that should be adhered to that is now being abandoned because of quotas and because of, you know, like filling in perceived grievances for certain, like gender, race, sexuality, like color, all this stuff. Like, there's a lot of people that are in positions that they shouldn't be in. And it gives the public an inaccurate opinion of what that is.
Yeah. Well, I've made a mistake. I mean, I run my own comedy club, and I do try to mix it up as much as I can in terms of gender, ethnicity, all that stuff. Because I do think that makes for a better show. If you've got five acts on and they've all got the same exact story, that isn't as interesting as five people who are different, right? But because of the realities of the industry where the vast majority of comedians are men, sometimes I have gone, well, she's not quite ready, but I'll get her on because she's a woman.
Yeah.
And every single time I've done that, I've regretted it because they weren't ready. Right? And a year from now they will be, but they're not yet. And the punishment isn't just for me. The punishment is also on them. They have a bad experience at my gig. And also, people will come up to you and go, well, they're not really funny, are they? And it's like, well, it's not true.
Yeah.
You just have to put people in the position to succeed when they're ready.
Across the board, I think that's a really positive and good, if anyone's takeaway from tonight, like that sentiment, I think, should be gilded. Yeah. Like it's.
So the goal of this whole thing should be to eliminate discrimination.
Yeah.
Right? And the truth is that in the comedy industry, it is harder being a woman as a comedian because audiences do prejudge women, and women, female comedians, have to deal with shit that I would never have to deal with. You know, like a friend of mine who, she was telling me, she was on stage 2 weeks ago and a group of drunk guys would go and get your tits out for the lads, right? That's not going to happen to me.
It's happened to me.
Yeah. I was going to say.
That's what the Patreon people are expecting after the show. Like, that's... You pay your money, you get your price.
Yeah. It's harder to be a comedian, but we are now at a point where the attempt to address that balance has gone so far that it's easier to progress as a female comedian.
Yeah,
which is fine.
Is that like a justified restitution for that problem? Is that like, oh yeah, women comedians had it bad for ages, so now you all get to, like, you know, undeservedly get on panel shows and make people think women comedians are kind of shit?
I think we need to eliminate discrimination.
Right.
And then stop there. That's my opinion.
Okay. Tell them all about it, those conspiracy guys. I think there's an association with... quickly change the subject. There's an association with atheism... And
that was quite a gear change.
Yeah, put a full stop on that, because I'm going to say some shit and I regret. People are like, how dare you? Atheism and free thinking and religion and being very conservative. So I was watching a lot of videos of like Stephen Fry, who's you know, not an atheist, I think agnostic, but he's like considered one of the great minds of our time. And then you have people who, like, say, white Christian right in America who are very conservative, and they seem to be against, like, women's reproductive rights, and they seem to be against, you know, people of color and immigrants and all these kind of things that you would associate with, right, Christian, Texan, build a wall, get out, brownie, whatever, right? And those things are often conflated. Like, the atheism and free thinking... To be a free thinker, I think there's a lot of times where people in a place of faith, or if they believe in something, that they are like Muslims or Christians or Jews, they often get like boxed into this thing, and people who don't believe in this dogma end up being labelled as like, yeah, the SJWs, let's say, for example, a lot of them don't go to mass, or they don't go to mosque, or they don't believe in any kind of religion, and yet their beliefs are just as dogmatic as a religion, right?
Well, they do believe in a religion.
What's the religion?
Social justice.
Sure.
That's their religion. Yeah. And if you look at how religious people tend to react when you challenge things that they espouse,
yeah,
they always react in similar ways, just like the social justice warriors, because the whole structure that they have is based on faith, and faith alone, because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's a dogma that they've written down that they have to just repeat.
But they have priests.
Yeah.
They have priests, which is the Twitter blue ticks with lots of followers. They have priests. They have certain things you're supposed to believe just as a given. You're not supposed to question them. And if you do, you're a heretic and you must be expelled or cancelled, right? Excommunicated. The whole way of looking at the world through the prism of social justice, it's the new religion. And it's an inevitable reaction to... And look, I say this as someone who's agnostic myself. I don't believe in God. But we can't not acknowledge the fact that in killing God, we have created a vacuum that cannot be filled by consumerism, by liberalism, by capitalism. It doesn't fill those voids that we have inside of ourselves. And social justice is a way of cracking the human code in the same way that previous religions have done as well. It gives answers to those eternal questions. What is my purpose in life? Right? It was to fight for justice. Right? Why is the world so fucked up? Because it is, right? The world is deeply unfair, chaotic, unpredictable, right? Well, that's because of the patriarchy, or it's because of racism, or it's because, like, that it gives you an answer. And what is my mission in life? Well, it's to fight for this. It's to spread this thing. It's to be, to proselytize this thing, right? So it's the new religion of our time, and it's inevitable that it's emerged in a society that has killed God. And I recognizes myself as someone who's a non-believer that there are certain voids in human beings that don't get filled with all this material stuff, and inevitably something will emerge to address those concerns.
Like, it's something inside yourself that you feel is outside yourself. So God is usually this ineffable thing outside of your own personality. It's something that's not controls you, but is not in your control. And I think the people who don't, I'm not like fucking recruiting for the Catholic Church around here, but I'm saying, like, people who don't believe in that are traditionally people who are in a social justice kind of frame of mind, and they often feel themselves to be the all-powerful. They often act as if they themselves are the dollars out of justice, and of they're smiting people on Twitter as a vengeful God would. And it seems that people who believe in religion are often considered to be backward and, you know, like, inhumane. And the value in somebody's faith, like, say, for example, like, the Christians in America don't believe that abortion should be allowed because it's a life and whatever. That's not what I'm saying, that they say that. Like, that's a totally valid and, like, it's a thing that's allowed to be believed. And there's room in discourse for that. But now, because of this, like, atheist social justice religion's dogma, that has to be scrubbed away. That's not allowed to coexist. Why do you think, like, that there's a
because it's a religion.
Of it, like,
because it's a religion. If it was a system of thought, if it was a philosophy, the way you deal with a philosophy is you go, well, which part of this makes sense? Let's question it. Let's prod it. Let's test it. Let's use reason.
But they want to destroy that kind of right-wing conservative mindset, rather than live in a world where both things can coexist. And if you want to move to Alabama or to Georgia and not be allowed by law to have any, you know, reproductive health laws in your favor, you can do that. But they want to fucking get rid of it. And I don't... That's just a small symptom of a much bigger problem.
Well, it's a religious purity. It's a purity.
Yeah.
It's a purity test. And they, on both sides, religions, they always use euphemisms for things. So you said it yourself, women's reproductive rights, right? Now, I think the situation we have in the UK on abortion is broadly accurate because it's something that... just that's my opinion, right? But when you're talking about abortion, you are killing, you're talking about killing babies, right? Or killing future life, right? No one wants to talk about it. It's pro-choice. What the fuck does that mean?
But they're changing their mentality into going, it's not killing a baby, it's just getting rid of clumps of human cells.
Yes.
So they recategorize this stuff. Do you know? Right. They also recategorize and rebrand these terms, like we talked about around racism. They'll rebrand it into a thing that suits their narrative. So what I'm asking is, why do you think that the social justice crew want to abolish and eradicate any dissenting opinion rather than be happy to live in harmony with like a kind of a bicameral world?
Same reason that the communists in my country, in the Soviet Union, wanted to conquer the whole world. Because the only way to make a flawed system work is if you force everyone to be part of it. Because if there's an alternative, i.e. capitalism, people will look at that and go, well, that's better, let's do that instead. So the only way to make social justice work as a flawed and hypocritical ideology is to impose it on everybody. Otherwise, the fact that this is completely ridiculous will be exposed by the contrast with everything else. So they have to take over the whole of society, otherwise it just won't work. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it sounds like a...
conspiracy
like a dark,
theory.
Yeah, it sounds like a dark, shitty dystopia where everybody has no crack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying there's a lizard man sitting somewhere doing this whole social justice thing, but it's a religion, and it's addictive, and people are given a sense of meaning by it that they otherwise don't have.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, I'm not universally critical of this thing. I mean, we live in a capitalist society where people of our age and younger don't really, on the whole, have an opportunity to be capitalist, to own capital, to own their own property. So in a world like that, people are going to start to question capitalism.
It
it's inevitable.
The socialist buzz is very much like ingrained in people 30 and under.
Yeah.
Traditionally, people who don't own property, who don't have like a lot of money, they're all like, yeah, let's share everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's handy. It's handy. It's a handy ideology to have when you have fuck all. Yeah, let's just share fuck all. So we'll all have less. Talking about like taxing the billionaires 70 or 80%, it's very, it's short-sighted, and it's also shown to be unsuccessful as a system of government. So like,
but young people don't know that.
Because they're too young to know.
They haven't read anything.
Okay. Yeah. So, it's very presumptuous.
I'm sorry, but, young people, but it's fucking true, isn't it?
So like, in China right now, you have a system called a Sesame Point system. I think I talked about this before on some shows, where it's a fucking episode of Black Mirror, where you have a point, a score for your behavior in society. So if you like pay back your loans, you pay your rent on time, you pay your bills, you don't get arrested, you're a good boy, you know, you pay your taxes, you don't fuck around smoking too many cigarettes or you know, gambling and doing these things, because everything is like kind of monitored in your bank accounts and stuff. So if you behave like a good citizen, you know, for the state, you get more points. If you do a crime and get arrested, you obviously lose a bunch of points. But also, when people hang, if you come back out into society and you're going back to your friends, when you hang out with your friends after being in jail, their fucking points go down for hanging out with you. Mm. So it's promoting them to not hang out with you and kind of put you outside, like out in the dark, do you know? Because you've done that thing, you could be a bad seed and could convince them, it's like, just one more score, lads. One more. Like, how? Like, are we far away from that in the West? Like, on Twitter, people are really self-censoring. Like, you get scolded, you get banned for 7 days, because the cultural capital of social media, it doesn't need to be actual Sesame Points linked up to your bank account or paying the taxes. People have such value in their public face or their public image. That they won't say anything or they'll behave well lest they get like a 7-day ban and they can't tweet about like Eggs Benedict or whatever. How far away do you think we are in the West from like an actual system like that? People are roaring for it in the US. They're roaring for socialism. Mm. They're dying to get the Democrats in. I don't know fuck all about British politics, really. It's very boring, and there's lots of really pale motherfuckers, like, I can't look at it. Just, like, have a sandwich or something. Just get some blood sugar going, like, your eyes are very dark. Like, here, you're talking about, like is Labour trying to...
No, I don't think they are, actually. I think... in terms of just coming back to what you're talking about with the social credit system in China, on trigonometry, we interviewed a friend of mine who's a former advisor to two U.S. presidents.
Wow.
Who's now a tech expert. And she was talking about the social credit system in China. It's actually worse than what you're saying, because they have the biggest startup in the world is a facial recognition company in China whose name I can't remember.
Probably in Chinese. Yeah.
And that company is now working with the people who are running the social credit system.
Oh, fuck off.
And so if you don't express the right emotions during the national anthem, they can tell.
Shit.
I think your audience would enjoy that episode. Look it up. It's Trigonometry with Pippa Malgram. We did two interviews with her.
Excellent podcast before we go.
Yeah, but the other thing that she says in that interview is that we already have that system here. It's just not done through the government.
Right.
So your iPhone, for example, can already tell the people at Apple if you're having a heart attack.
Yeah.
Right.
That's why I'm wearing this motherfucker.
And... Yeah, useful for you, I imagine, yeah.
Yeah, real cholesterol will get you. Mm.
But what we have is we all carry these devices that actually emit a tremendous amount of information. And the thing with predictive technology is it doesn't have to make sense, right? So, for example, it is a fact that people who eat blueberries are more likely to vote conservative, right? Is that because blueberries make you conservative? No, probably not. But if you have that information about people, their shopping habits, where they go, what they do, you can already shape their behavior. And you're already starting to see it happen. I mean, personalized advertising is an example of where that goes.
We've all had that thing where you're talking about something super vague and then Instagram is like, do you want one?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know you do.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then you're scrolling Instagram in front of someone, and then it's like fucking My Little Pony butt plugs, and you're like, somebody was talking on the train, it wasn't me. it's very targeted. Like it seems that in China they can just make you do it, but over here they have to kind of entice you, and we're willing to do it. It seems.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that in the West, because we have a democracy more or less, the government does not have authoritarian power over you, but the people who do have that level of power over you are the tech companies.
Mm.
They do have that level of power because they can shut down your YouTube channel, they can shut down your Patreon, they can shut down your Subscribestar, they can stop you accessing PayPal. Eventually, you'll not be able to get a bank account if you're a Nazi or whatever it is.
Happened
right?
to the Proud Boys, happened to Lauren Southern, Sargon of the Cad, all that.
So they can shut you down, and they will, right? So it's that kind of system. Plus, you add to that the fact that social media is a kind of form of brain cancer anyway, where people's most extreme facets are being broadcast as the only thing that they are, right? Like, you're the thing that you care about. Like, if you post conspiracy theories on your Facebook every single day, everyone just think you're fucking mental, even though you're not, right?
Hundreds of thousands of people think you're mental. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you just did it to your friends, eventually all the people who are not into conspiracy theories that are your friends will just think you're completely crazy and stop talking to you.
That's why I made the show, because I haven't got any friends anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I have to tell somebody, and then all you cunts show up.
So you've made a good deal of it, but for most people, it isn't quite like that.
Yeah.
So there is a form of social policing that happens as well. Mm. People are much more terrified of saying the wrong thing on social media than they are in person, because they know that when I'm talking to you, I get a sense of who you are as a human being, and you see what the intonation, the intention behind what I'm saying. We can have a conversation and we can clean it up.
Yeah.
But on social media, everything happens in public. So we're constantly living in this world where we feel like we're being watched all the time.
Yeah.
So we are scared to say things on social media because we're right to be scared. Because, you know, I get this with me. Like, I talk about free speech on my social media, and there are lots of people, ironically, in the comedy world who genuinely think I'm some evil right winger just because I believe in free speech.
You want to see some of my fucking iTunes reviews, man? It's bananas. Like, in one it's like, one star. These guys love skull-fucking Donald Trump. I'd rather fucking stick dicks in my ears than listen to this again. And then the next one is like, one star. These socialist liberal pinko fuckfaces. Yes. Yeah. I'm like, because of one, like I said, one sentence, one sentiment about, like, because, you know, I can say some shit that's not either right wing or left wing, but you're trying to entertain a thought, you're trying to talk something out.
Yeah.
And they just hear that thing and go, one star.
Yeah.
Like, how can you not like something and be so motivated to tell everybody about it? Just be like, just turn it off.
Mm.
Just like that. Just do that. Instead of like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can all leave reviews as well in iTunes at the end of the show. 5 stars. But like, 5 stars.
Well, would you know? I mean, look, 25% of society have serious mental illness. Right. And it's not to stigmatize mental illness. 25% of people in the country have mental illness. And I think that's pretty much the percentage of people who in the country who are on Twitter. So it kind of works out.
The numbers don't lie, Constantine.
That's my conspiracy, anyway.
Yeah, man. We could talk for hours, and I usually do, but we've run out of time for now. But I want you to tell everybody about your excellent, excellent podcast and your show that's coming up in November, where we're talking about all of this kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, first of all. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for coming, man.
And thanks for having me.
Round of applause.
Thanks, guys. So if you want to check out my YouTube show and podcast, it's called Trigonometry, as in trigonometry. The idea is we talk to people that we don't necessarily agree with. So I'm kind of somewhere in the center politically. My buddy, who's a comedian as well, he's left of center. And we talk to a lot of people who may not be in those categories. And my show, my comedy show called All Well That Ends Well, I did a whole run in Edinburgh, which went very well, and I'm doing it again in London on the 16th of November at the Bill Murray Comedy Club. If you follow me on Twitter, it's my pinned tweet. I think that's it.
And your trigonometry show, like, I've been listening to that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people here would listen to me when they're going to sleep, and it's all like, oh yeah, the soothing tones. You Emma Quinn and Ed Salmon do aid to that, and then I'm all like, and then the dicks, like my Wexford accent. These balls. Yeah, some of the stuff you talk about on that, at the start of every show, you say, like, we don't pretend to be the experts, we talk to the experts.
Yeah.
And that's something that I really want to do going forward, is interview some people who are writing books, who are doing the real stuff. Like, I'm gleaning a lot of information from the internet.
Hmm.
And now it is so much more difficult to get accurate information, or even to get any information on some topics, because it's been Orwellianly fucking removed into the memory hole, and you can't find stuff on Sandy Hook now.
What kind of shit do you read?
Well, I mean, do you know the black websites that have green writing that make your face feel bad? Those ones, like, right. GeoCities websites and shit. Like, but you're talking
so
to
so this is like the biggest convention of weed smoking people in the country, right?
I think.
Is that it?
There's a lot of green text readers in here, I think. So I mean, you're actually talking to the experts. You're talking.
Well, yeah, we have, like I said, former presidential advisors.
Yeah, amazing.
Leading. We just had Douglas Murray on, who's just got a book out called The Madness of Crowds, talking very much about the stuff that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. We've just had Rod Little on.
People who you wouldn't even know that you wanted to listen to. That's the thing. You're looking through it and you're like, like, get on it. Start from the start and go through it. It's fucking top drawer.
And we do it like kind of like this. We're both comedians, so we keep it light. We make it funny as much as we can. But also talking about, you know, like, I mean, conspiracies. It's interesting to me. Like, my friend and I, we both voted Remain in the referendum. Right. But our reaction to half the country voting to leave was to go, well, why did it happen? Rather than to go, oh, all these people are racist. Yeah. Right. So we started talking to a lot of people who voted Brexit to try and understand why they did it. Right.
What and now a lot of them are dead.
Apparently.
Since.
And so the more you kind of educate yourself about these different issues, the more you understand that the world is nuanced and complex and there's different ways of looking at things. And that's what we're trying to do, is to kind of bring a bit of balance and a bit of nuance to what is otherwise a very clickbaity and messed up, biased world.
Going straight to the core of it. Well, that's it. Trigonometry and Our World That Ends Well. I'll leave the links for the people who are listening at home in the description below, and for you guys, I guess I'll just get a marker and write the links on your arms or something like that. I don't know how it works. Ah, fucking internet. But yeah, for now, we're going to take a 15-minute break. You guys can go and do your drinks and do your wee-wees. And one more time, a round of applause for Constantine Kissin. Thank you.
Deepest chat.
See you in a little while.